I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. I'm here today with Tiller Russell, writer and director of the new movie Silk Road, which is on demand, digital, and in select theaters now. Tiller, welcome. I'm so excited to have you on the show.
Hillary, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. Our pleasure is all ours. And to start off, Tiller, the film Silk Road is based on the article Dead End on Silk Road, Internet Crime Kingpin Ross Ulbricht's Big Fall, which was by David Kushner and published in Rolling Stone in February of 2014. So I'd love to hear from you what it was about the story that sparked your interest and got you thinking down that path of creating a film about Ulbricht's story.
Well, it's interesting. For me, it really began the day after Ross Ulbricht was arrested in the Glen Park branch of the San Francisco Library. The day after he was arrested, the story hit the papers, and I was off shooting a crime documentary at the time. But I remember vividly opening the newspaper and reading the story. And at the time, the story was, it was very sketchy and sort of shadowy. You know, there was mention of Dread Pirate Roberts. It was kind of some of the earliest reporting on the dark web. And you know, when Bitcoin was barely sort of a blip on the radar culturally. And, but I remember having this sort of visceral reaction. There's an amazing story here. I don't know whether it's a documentary, whether it's a feature film, whether it's a nonfiction book, but I just, it fascinated me right from the get-go. And so I began to follow the story in the press, kind of everything that came out, I was tracking it and clocking it and kind of waiting to see where it would go. And then eventually David Kushner, who is a brilliant writer and reporter, published the Rolling Stone piece that you referenced. And what sort of so captivated me about that was it was a very kind of grounded humanist portrait of Ross Ulbricht. And suddenly, rather than being this kind of shadowy and nefarious figure, he was a kid from Texas who was an Eagle Scout and, you know, getting a degree in physics and, you know, from Austin and attending UTD. And suddenly, it felt relatable to me in some way or another. You know, I'm 10 years older than Ross, but I grew up in Dallas, Texas, and I know the world kind of a bit that he pertains to or is from. And so that article suddenly made the story accessible to me in a way where I thought, maybe there really is a movie here.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned Kushner again, which agreed that his writing is fantastic. Did you work with him on adapting his article for your screenplay at all, since he had spoken with Ulbricht's like family and friends, etc.?
I talked to him a great deal. And one of the things and Kushner and I are now working on a couple of things together because we sort of so clicked throughout this process. But what happened was I called him and I said, okay, tell me everything that's not in your article, that didn't make the cut, that for whatever reason ended up on the cutting room floor, or that the editors at Rolling Stone didn't want. And so we talked kind of at great length and about kind of his process as a reporter. And what one of the things that ended up coming out was one of his primary sources was Ross's ex-girlfriend, Julia V. And what Kushner offered, he's like, you know, if you want to know more and you want to hear it from directly from the source, you should connect with her and I'll give you the phone number or email, I think it was. And so he was both very much, Kushner was both very much an open book and sort of very generous in what he was willing to share. And at the same time, he was also very hands-off. He wasn't sort of insistent on dictating any particular direction or sort of, you know, political persuasion or any specific moral take. He treated himself as a resource for me to draw from. And so we just really clicked.
Yeah, he sounds so helpful. And he was who connected us together as well. So just so generous in that way.
Still hooking us up, yeah. Kushner.
Exactly. Shout out. and as far as Ulbricht, I noticed his Twitter account is pretty active. Did you get to speak with him directly at all in any capacity?
Well, it was interesting. When we first, you know, soon after that article was published, it was optioned by producers. Producers came to me, and what ended up happening in a weird way was the producers called me and they're like, what do you know about the story? I'm like, everything. I've been obsessing about this story since it first came out, you know, and they kind of laughed. And so the first thing that I did was I sat down and I wrote Ross a letter. And at the time he was locked up at MCC New York. Mm. But I knew the odds of him being willing to speak with me were very low. But I figured it was sort of incumbent upon me to take a shot at it anyway. But rightly, I think, I'm sure his lawyers shut it down, because they didn't want to jeopardize, you know, his journey through the legal system. I think he was still awaiting sentencing at the time. And then there was going to be the lengthy appeals process. And then really until recently, I know that Ross and his family were hoping for a presidential pardon, which did not come to pass. And so what ended up happening was I didn't have access to him in a fundamental way as I would have liked to. But what I did have was there was a very rich archival historical record that he had left kind of in his wake. There were all of the posts that he had made as Dread Pirate Roberts on the Silk Road website. There were diary entries for years from before he had even launched Silk Road through, you know, close to his arrest. And those diary entries were on his laptop, which was confiscated and were later entered into the evidentiary record. So there was all of that material. And then there was also, and which is to say, material in his own voice, and also the material from the chat logs. So, you know, in the movie, you see depicted the kind of exchanges between DPR and between Knob. Well, all of that stuff, you know, is drawn from the journalistic record, so to speak. And all of the voiceover that is performed by Nick Robinson, who plays Ross Ulbricht, is all of that stuff is drawn from Ross's own words. So while I didn't have access to the man, I had access to his voice in some regard or another. One additional piece of the puzzle was recently, I too was sort of eagerly awaiting to see whether he would be granted a pardon. And when he didn't, I woke up the next morning and I went to the Bureau of Prisons website, the BOP website, and used the inmate locator. And when I looked him up, it said release date, /life. Mm. And it hit me in kind of a, I guess in my heart and kind of in my gut, that regardless of what your moral or political take on Ross and his sentence is, painful to be staring down the barrel of that for the rest of your life. So I sat down and I wrote him a letter, and the letter basically said, hey, the movie is coming out, and this is my portrait of you. And it's a personal portrait, and in places where the biographical record, you know, where your record didn't, where there were gaps in it, I poured in pieces of myself and entered into it as I, you know, to the best of my ability to hew to the spiritual truth of your story. But if you ever want to sit down with me, I'll be there in a heartbeat. And so I'm waiting to see if I hear back from him, because if given the opportunity, I would absolutely relish the chance to do so.
That's wonderful. And within the film, many characters, but of course Ulbricht front and center, they're experiencing that internal conflict, and the line between right and wrong is blurred. And, you know, Ulbricht was a young man who was trying to live an aspirationally peaceful, if not idyllic, life in much of his world. But mm-hmm. then on the other side, you know, he eventually came to be putting out hits on people, overseeing sales of drugs and weapons and murder for hire, but still very naive with his pseudonym of Dread Pirate Roberts from the movie The Princess Bride. And I think you did a really great job showing that and his almost cognitive dissonance in a way. And it sounds like, based on what you just shared, that was very compelling for you to share with the viewer. But is that accurate?
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that and noting it. To me, one of the things that most captivated me about him as a character and this as a story is, and I suppose I'm always fascinated by this, is the internal conflicts that are in people, you know, the forces of light warring with the forces of dark. And in Ross's case, you know, you have this guy that had a very astonishingly compressed arc. You know, if you think about it, from the time he launches Silk Road until his arrest is less than 2 years. So this is somebody that goes into it as kind of a dreamer and a naive, and then incrementally kind of takes these steps toward breaking bad, becoming a gangster, becoming kind of a legend, you know, in that short period of time. So it's almost as if he had a lifetime's worth of drama condensed into this very accelerated arc, which I think is one of the things that probably, you know, I imagine is what made it so challenging for him to navigate. And so that was absolutely something that fascinated me as a writer and filmmaker and storyteller.
And something else that was, you know, the Silk Road marketplace in general was super fascinating for me. I think I started looking into it maybe in 2014, around mm-hmm. that time. So you were ahead of me in when it was kind of breaking, for sure. But what was fascinating to me about that was that it really brought the dark web into the mainstream. Like, I didn't really have a great awareness at that time. And I remember trying to educate myself about Tor and Bitcoin and trying to wrap my mind around these new, somewhat complex concepts. And I think you did a really great job of demonstrating to the viewer how these all, like, what they were independent of each other, but then also how they work together. Was that an intentional goal for you as well in the storytelling, to try to like build that foundation of everything that he incorporated in how it worked?
Yes, absolutely. And I think the challenge with a story like this is you have different subsets of the audience. There are those people like me that were sort of obsessives about the story and were really geeked on every twist and turn. And then you have people like me, but who have a much greater and more sophisticated understanding of the tech that's associated with it. But then you have a lot of people that like heard the headline, maybe know the name, and some people that never heard any of it at all. So in a way, you're hoping to reach all of those different audiences, the people that are very inside baseball and the people that are completely, you know, virgin to it in some form or fashion. And so we were constantly trying to recalibrate, okay, what is the minimum amount of expositional information that you need as an audience member to take the dramatic arc? Because at the end of the day, you know, as somebody who makes documentaries, who makes nonfiction films, there is a distinction between a feature film like this that's based on this true story and a documentary. And so, you know, you are trying to give the audience the tools that they need to understand it, which at the end of the day, which I think is important also to add, which is that the genius of this idea, or the sort of power of it, is it's actually a very simple idea. Using Tor to provide a cloak of anonymity for users, and then blending that with Bitcoin as the currency. And so really, it's the kind of merger of those two technologies that leads to this instantaneous kind of global marketplace where anyone can get anything they want at any time from the comfort of their own home. And suddenly it's the mailman that's becoming your dope dealer and actually has no idea, you know?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And our audience here at Cybercrime Radio is, you know, quite understanding, educated on these topics. But for outside audience, like you said, they're kind of learning along with Jason Clark's character, who is Agent Bowden, a.k.a. Nob. He's sort of, for me, when I watched, he was kind of like the baseline in receiving a quick education since he was transferred to the cybercrime division. And I also think that his character serves a greater purpose, and correct me if I'm wrong, but he demonstrates how crime was changing and shifting from something that was very much on the ground physical to something rooted in digital.
Yeah, and I think to me, you know, what's one of the things that I was hoping to explore and intended to explore in the film is there are these different divides in the characters. You know, Ross is this sort of millennial disruptor, visionary with kind of the passion and hubris and willingness to kind of, you know, throw off the chains and sort of think in a different way. And juxtaposing that with the kind of generational conflict where, Jason Clarke's character, Rick Bowden, is emblematic of what they call, in DEA, they call them Jurassic narcs, right? Which is the old school people that grew up in the kind of like door kicker, rock'em sock'em DEA era. And once upon a time, they called those guys the gunslingers. And as the culture has changed, all those guys that had the old school analog street knowledge began to kind of increasingly be out of step with the evolution of the technology and its application from the law enforcement perspective. And so you get this guy that knows how crooks think and knows how informants work and knows how the streets work. And yet suddenly he's now kind of, his authority and his abilities are abrogated to irrelevance. And he is left kind of like isolated odd man out. And so to me, he was almost, almost analogous to a Peckinpah character, you know, like the guys in Wild Bunch or whatever, where the times have changed, but you haven't. And so the two characters were an attempt to explore the ways in which the technology has both united and isolated us. And in a weird way, again, the intent is these guys are kind of two sides of the same coin in the sense of increasingly they are cutting everyone else out of their respective worlds and pledging their time and attention and, you know, consequently consciousness to each other in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Thank you for that. And you mentioned, the type of agent that Bowden is, the Rock'em Sock'em type. Did you work with any law enforcement or any cybercrime officials to get an understanding of the inner workings of something like this?
Yeah, really on both sides of the equation. So I've been fortunate enough as somebody that, you know, that works in nonfiction as well as in narrative, that I have kind of a wonderful pool of technical experts that I can go to and I'm a big believer in surround yourself with smart people and who are experts in what they do, listen to them, trust them, and solicit counsel. And so I was able to really draw on both. You know, I had experts, an expert, Tony Castillo from who came from kind of the world of the dark web and once upon a time was sort of a black hat turned white hat hacker and really had deep and intimate knowledge of the tech and how it worked and how to kind of hopefully calibrate the line between being clear and accurate as to the facts and the evolution of the technology, and yet being able to kind of code switch and translate to a broader audience in a way that, okay, I can follow what's going on here. You know, what is Tor? How does it work? And then on the other hand, I also had access to kind of these old school narcs, and I actually sent I was making three projects at the same time, which was an intense experience, needless to say. But, one was Night Stalker for Netflix. Another was Silk Road, obviously this one for Lionsgate. And then also a series for Amazon Prime called The Last Narc, and which was about the murder of this DEA agent in Mexico in 1985. And then the investigation that followed. But what I actually did was I put together the lead narc, the lead DEA guy from that series with Jason Clarke, because I thought, A, these two guys are just going to find each other fascinating, and B, it was an opportunity to kind of offer something up to Jason where, a smart actor will steal the relevant details that they need from sort of tics and physicality and sort of verbiage, or, you know, sitting that you're making sure that when you sit down, your back is always to a wall and you're always facing the door so that somebody can't get in and get the drop on you, or whatever the case may be. And I knew that also would probably just be hilarious and fascinating, those two guys sharing a taco together. And it was fascinating, because when Jason Clark came back from that, when he showed up on set, he had this huge belt buckle, I think with like a rooster on it, that he had clearly seen on this guy. And I don't remember whether it was the exact belt buckle he had gotten from him, or whether he had gone and got himself one. But it was like those simple little details, being able to kind of merge the, you know, my access to interesting folks from the documentary world with, you know, the actors, was a resource, you know, that they could draw from.
Well, it certainly paid off, because the cast, they're incredible. And the roles that they played were, you forgot that you were, you know, watching a movie. You were very invested in their characters and in their individual storylines. So just fantastic job by everyone.
I appreciate you saying that. It felt like a real gift to have this big and eclectic and diverse cast, where it was sort of one interesting actor after another came in to join the circus, so to speak. And I was really grateful to have the opportunity to collaborate with so many fascinating and talented folks.
Absolutely. And you mentioned having three projects happening at the same time, which was a question that I had for you, which you quickly answered. But Night Stalker, just wanted to commend you on that as well, because it's you do such a great job of changing how stories are told, and with that and focusing on the people Ramirez interacted with versus glorifying him, which is something that can easily, you know, happen. And I just wanted to say that to you.
I appreciate you saying that. You know, it's very going into these true stories, crime stories, whether it's Silk Road or whether it's Night Stalker, it's kind of a heavy mantle to wear, and to some degree or another, because you are dealing with these, you know, some of the most profound and tragic moments of people's lives, and you want to be treating them in a way that is sensitive and nuanced, and also dramatic and compelling at the same time. So I'm constantly with all of my, you know, wonderful collaborators that surround me, trying to kind of recalibrate and do it in a way that people feel like their stories are being told in a sensitive and respectful way.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, what's next for you? You seem to have no shortage of projects at any time.
It's funny. It's a never-ending supply. Now at this point, these crazy stories find me. My phone or my email will come in, and somebody will be like, "Yo, man, I just robbed 15 banks," you know, and then like, you know, away we'll go with whatever the next story is. But there's always that interesting carnival of stories that are coming in. I'm adapting as my next feature film the documentary I had made a few years ago, which is on Netflix, Operation Odessa, and then. Also looking at a narrative version of Night Stalker, doing that as a limited, you know, 8-10 part series. And then there's some really fascinating nonfiction crime, and actually at the intersection of both kind of crime and music stories that I'm looking at. So about time for me to get back to work and hopefully go make some more compelling stuff to share with the world.
Well, that sounds fantastic. And I'm looking forward to watching those once they're completed. And I'm just so excited for you.
Thank you so much. I'm really grateful for your time and grateful to have the opportunity to join you on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for coming on the show. And everyone, the new Tiller's new movie is Silk Road, and it is on demand, digital, and in select theaters now. Thank you, Tiller.
Thank you so much. Be good. Stay safe.
Yes, you as well. I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. For more on cybercrime and cybersecurity, visit us at cybercrimemagazine.com.